Welcome to Avery Adventures Podcast. I'm Ryan Avery.
And I'm Tanya Avery.
She's the one not paying attention.
I'm doing work.
Anyways,
we're doing a sale on the Mule Deer shirt because we're podcasting with the legend.
Oh, goodness gracious. Here we go again. The legend smudging.
Oh, as always, you can get 20% off using the code FATKID at mountainops.com. We'd appreciate it. So we got Robbie Denning back on here. We have Robbie on here quite a few times, but if you know anything about mule deer, you know who Robbie Denning is. So we like to have him on. People claim that he knows a lot about mule deer, and hunting with him 3 years in a row, I can concur that he might know something. Robbie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I don't know if I know much. I just love to hunt them.
Well, you seem to produce. So we have Robbie on here today to talk about his 2017 season. Robbie hunted a few states. Can you kind of go into what states you hunted, Robbie?
Yeah, you know, backing up to those podcasts we did last spring, we were really worried about winter kill around here. And so I thought good year to hunt out of the winter kill zone. So I put in for Colorado too. And I did draw that. It was a second season tag. Yeah, pretty good unit, but that's a pretty tough season. Found out in June I had that, so I arranged a scouting trip, got down there in July. Was after I started scouting in Idaho, I was really glad I had a Colorado tag because it was slim pickings around here.
We'll hit the home state first. You hunted multiple seasons. Can you kind of take us through what you did there?
Yeah, Idaho right now, our non-resident tag quota has not been met for, oh my goodness, it might be 20 years. I can't remember. It used to sell out in one day. There's 10,000 non-resident tags available in Idaho, something like that. There might be 12,000 if you include the whitetail tags. And they used to go on sale like December 10th, and they were gone by the 11th. Well, with the downturn in mule deer hunting, you know, the remnants of the winter of 92-93, Idaho just kind of lost its footing as a great mule deer state. So those were not getting sold out. Fish and Game was looking to raise revenue, so they started opening those up to the residents. As you know, Ryan, I know you picked up a few. So I've been buying them. It's kind of a, if you live in Idaho, it's a cheap way to hunt an extra tag versus going out of state. So I had an archery tag this year in Idaho, and then I drew that same tag Tanya had with the early rut tag, not the late buck hunts, but you look in the regulations, Idaho's got these some of these early rut tags. They go into, you know, roughly the first week of November, you get some rut activity. So that was the two that I had.
Gotcha. So on those two hunts, I know we've touched on this before, but if you bow hunted and rifle hunted, can you take us through when you started scouting and how you scout different for each season?
Yeah, you know, our high country is really taking it in the shorts around here, not just because of the winter. I mean, it just is not as good as it used to be. And, you know, I don't know if it's just a lot more hunting pressure. I mean, I think that's what it is. But Idaho gives a lot of late hunts out, too, you know, these late buck hunts. And it doesn't seem like a lot of tags, you know, 20 here, 10 there. But I just don't see the great bucks I used to see in the high country. And, you know, those late tags, you know, are on the winter range and they've been around long enough. Guys have really learned how to hunt them. There's some east of Idaho Falls here, and you know, it's they only give, I don't know, there'd be about 6 to 8 non-resident tags out of 3 units. Half of those guys will be from Utah, and nothing against Utah, but those guys know how to hunt deer, and you know, they bring the family and the spotting scopes, and you know, they got everybody out looking, and they're efficient on them. And I don't want to blame it just on that. It's never just one thing, but our high country definitely has slipped in Idaho. And you know, I'm not seeing the good bucks I was seeing even 10 years ago. So I have switched and just started hunting some of the mid elevation, low elevation stuff, even some of the desert stuff. It's way tougher deer hunting. It's not conducive to bow hunting, but I'm still seeing good bucks. And so that was what I started scouting in late June. High country, I don't scout that early. I find that the deer don't really settle into the high country until, you know, late July, August. You know, sometimes you can find them in July, but then you can't find them again. So I started in late June in the lower country, trail cameras, all that stuff, lots of glassing. And I started finding okay numbers of bucks. Definitely not what it was last year, but I did find a couple of shooters I wanted to focus on. I found the one. It's on our Facebook page. You'll see it in the little video section. It says phone scope buck on it. And you should go look at that buck because when I first found him, he was only about maybe 180. I didn't even think I'd be hunting him. I was hoping I'd find something better. I found him in late July. Well, through August, it just really became apparent we lost a lot of bucks on this winter. I was seeing roughly the same amount of bucks, but we lost all of our upper age classes. I just was hardly seeing any shooters at all. So by the end of August, I ended up focusing back on that buck, but he had just exploded in that month. You know, a lot of times I don't see a lot of growth between the 1st of August and the end of August, but this buck was just a little bit different. He just grew, and he was pushing 190 by the time the archery season opened. So, I put all my eggs in that basket. Archery season opens August 30th. And I think between August 30th and September 30th, when it closed, I hunted him 16 days, and not all at once, but, you know, 6 days here, 4 days there, that kind of hunting. And out of those 16 days, I got to hunt him about eight of them. I was able to find him eight of those days. I did get within range of him. I had him at 45 yards once, had him at 85 yards once. That's a little long for me, but I was getting in there, and he saw me. And then I think another time I had him at about 70 yards. I just never could get a shot. Always on the move, always other bucks, always spooking. And that's kind of the problem with not hunting the high country for archery mule deer. And I'll just say it, hunting the high country, it's not easy, but it's more, you get more opportunities to stalk. Some of this lower country, wide open, the deer in the sagebrush, they're just very, very hard to stalk. And that's kind of that's the place he was. And, you know, that's why I haven't killed an archery mule deer in quite a few years, because I've been hunting these lower bucks, and they're just hard to get on. So anyway, season closed. I never got him. I hunted just a little bit of high country that I know, just to check it when it opened October 10th. And I saw two bucks in several days of hunting. And looking back at my journal, I brought my little journal here. You know, I keep a journal every year. I should have seen 10 to 15 and maybe a couple shooters. I saw two bucks. It was slow. And it just kind of, you know, reminded me these winters take an effect. And it wasn't just me. You know, I know a lot of guys in Southeast Idaho, and virtually all of them were having the same experience.
Now, when you talk about high country bucks, do you think the decline was solely from the winter kill, or do you think that, you know, Google Earth, Rockslide, like Eastman's kind of thing, where there's more people in that high back country, or is it just accumulation of both?
It's definitely accumulation of both. Like some of the high country I scouted this year, I looked at my journal last year in the same scouting trip. I saw roughly 25 bucks.
Wow.
I did one scouting trip this year, same country, zero bucks. And so that was winter kill. Obviously, they were there last year. They weren't there this year. That was winter kill. But to what you said, just the popularity of the backcountry the last 10, 15 years, that has taken an effect on them. It really has. And it's not that a bunch of guys go back there and kill a bunch of big bucks. They don't. They kill all the young bucks. They kill all the 22 to 24 inch bucks, you know, the 3-year-olds that really in another year or two, those are ones that are getting most of us pretty excited. And I think it's just been a culmination of that. And, you know, I've got friends in Wyoming, and they're seeing the same thing over there. You know, it's just our high country deer have taken a hit the last 10 years. They really have. The quality is down.
This is a little off topic, but it's always a heated discussion on the two tags you can buy in Idaho right now. Mm-hmm. And you see a lot of guys posting up, yeah, they shot their little buck, and then they're going to trophy hunt. What's your thoughts on that? Those two tags in Idaho?
Well, dude, you know me, I try not to get too political about this stuff. I'm always going to take advantage of what the law allows, right? I guess my personal ethics might be more liberal than what a lot of people's are. But, you know, if the people have voted and agreed upon it and it's the law, then I'm going to take advantage of it. So I don't want to be a hypocrite in this. I've bought tons of those non-resident tags over the years, you know, probably 10, 11 of them. They're not a good idea, though, because what they do is they take the resident hunters, which typically the guys that are going to buy those tags, if they're going to invest another $300, they're pretty serious hunters. You know, they got their honey holes. They know where to go. They're pretty efficient. You know, it's not just like, you know, some guy from Michigan that comes out here. It's his first time. You know, he's going to be lucky if he even gets one. You know, the tags go to some of the very best hunters. And so with what you said, yeah, that's a lot of times that's what I see is guys will be like, hey, yeah, now I can get a meat buck and I can trophy hunt for a bigger one. And it just, you just lose more bucks that way. And, you know, that's the direction our fishing game has gone. They're kind of talking about it now that maybe it's not such a good idea. And if it's, you know, if they take it away, then I'll go that direction too, obviously, you know, I won't be able to buy the tag anymore and there'll be some advantages to that. But yeah, I think overall it doesn't help, put it that way. And they'll, you know, the fishing game will say, well, but these tags used to go to non-residents. We always sold the tags. There's really no more, you know, pressure on the deer. Okay, but I still offer up that the guys that are buying these are really, really good deer hunters. And typically more serious, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. And so, you know, it's no longer going to a non-resident that might only have a 10% success or something like that. It's going to go to somebody that probably is capable of 50 to 100% success.
Yeah, I agree. All the people that I know that buy them aren't shooting, you know, little bucks. They're trying for two big bucks. And I bought them the last 3 years, and I've only shot two deer 1 year. And they're both going to have to be pretty significant. But there are a lot of people that, I don't know, they just get frustrated during their hunt, and they end up shooting those small 3 and 4 points, and then they're trophy hunting.
Yeah, and you know, some of the stuff we talk about, you know, we probably just really need the numbers. I mean, everything I just put out is theory. You know, maybe like what you said, a lot of guys buy them if they're really focusing on trophies, they're probably not going to shoot two deer. And so, and I know I haven't. I mean, I didn't fill mine this year. I have not filled two Idaho tags since like 2012. So, you know, maybe there's more emotion there than there is facts. I don't know. But I know one thing, if Idaho went the other direction and just said, look, we're not going to open these up to residents, I know it's not going to make the deer hunting worse.
Right. They did sell out from the last 4 years that I've been paying attention. They sold out before November 1st. So supply and demand's there. So you know what that usually means. The price is going to go up or they're going to change something.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they didn't even used to sell out. There used to be thousands and thousands of them left over. And now that we've had a hard winter, maybe it'll swing back that way. I did reach out to Fish and Game, and I wasn't able to reach them. They're all the ones around here are on flight training the last couple of days to see what the success rate was this year versus last year just on deer as a whole. You know, I'm suspecting it was down. But again, I don't have any facts on it. I can share my numbers with you. And I was kind of surprised. I looked them up last year. I Idaho only. I looked at 146 bucks between scouting and the end of hunting season, and 13 of them were shooters. This year, I actually saw 149 bucks. I actually saw more bucks this year than I did last year, but there were only 8 shooters in there, and then the quality of the shooters were smaller too. I really only saw one good buck this year in Idaho. So when I say shooters, I'm talking, you know, bucks I would shoot as it got down to the last of the season, kind of like I did on the one we'll talk about here in a little bit. And so while there was still a fair number of bucks around, the age classes were way down. They really were. We kind of lost that top end, and that seemed to be what I heard from the guys I've talked to. But I really would like to look at Fishing Game's data when they publish it, you know, what happened and everything. And you know, it definitely was a down year for sure. And it was a little spotty, you know, some places were fine. You talk to some guys who are like, oh yeah, it was great, you know, but I think on average, you might see guys not quite as excited about Idaho next year.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Sure. We live here.
It sucks here. Don't buy a tag.
So moving on to the state that didn't have near the winter kill or any, you know, I don't know what Colorado does because I never hunted there, but what season did you hunt? Have you hunted there before? What was your actual tactic on that hunt?
Okay. So for Colorado, most of Colorado didn't get winter kill. They did get some in Gunnison Basin. but you know, most of Colorado, they did pretty good. And I went down there in late July. I was down there, mid-August is when I went down. And just looking here, I saw 27 bucks in 3 days. 5 of them were shooters. So think about that ratio. I looked at 149 bucks in Idaho, and 8 of them were shooters. You know, I looked at 30 bucks roughly in Colorado, and 5 of them were shooters. I mean, Can you see the difference there? I mean, per buck seen, they just do better down there than we do here.
So do you make a mental note, or do you just whip out your notebook right when you see them and mark?
At the end of the day, dude, I just take it and I just write it down, you know, just like, what did I see? And then some days I miss, but every time I open my journal, you know, I'm like, okay, since I've been scouting, you know, what did I see that day? What did I see that day? And all I track is bucks and shooters. You know,
And I guess on, you know, the information side, how does that help you? What do you do with that information that makes Robbie Denning a better mule deer hunter?
Well, number one, it kind of helps me to forecast what to expect. And so like with Idaho, you just got to look at a lot of bucks to find a good one. That's just how it is. And so if you're planning on coming to Idaho for, you know, a big mule deer, you're going to have to figure out how to look at a lot of bucks, you know, and that typically for the non-resident, that means multiple years of coming. You know, I've been saying that on my scouting website for years. You know, you got to plan on multiple years. Where with Colorado, you just don't have to see quite as many bucks, not even near as many bucks in most units, to find a shooter. And so what do I do with that information? Well, what I did this year is like, man, Idaho's going to be tough. We're having a hard winter. This is a good year for me to go to Colorado. I lose a couple days drive and you know, just not very efficient to hunt it. And so I'm careful about when I go and where I go. But with this year, I just knew, hey, I got a better chance down there. And sure enough, I killed my best buck of the year in Colorado this year. So I just think it helps you know what to expect and be able to plan your hunts. And that's kind of why I'm glad you want to do a podcast right now. Because I know guys here, before we know it, man, it'll be application season. Like in 3 weeks, people start putting in for tags. I mean, that's just mind-blowing. And this stuff helps me kind of plan for what I want to do. Now, haven't seen that many bucks in Idaho this year. You know, I actually saw a few more bucks than what I did. I know we've got kind of an up and coming segment of the deer herd. I mean, there's bucks out there. There's no doubt, but they're pretty young. It's going to be a couple of years, and can't have a hard winter between now and then, or something drastic, right, or we'll be right back to square one.
But in that journal, do you kind of mark, you know, if you see a buck that's, you know, right on the line, you note that?
Yeah, because when you look at hundreds of bucks, you forget about a lot of them. And so, yeah, I do. I'll mark. Usually I just write down the unit of the drainage and then. That will aerial scout a little bit. I think I had like 6 hours this year. And so, you know, you kind of, when you look at that many bucks, you got to keep track of them because you will forget. You don't forget the giants. Don't get me wrong. But like what you said, you know, you kind of want to look at bucks from previous years. And that Idaho buck I hunted for archery this year, I can't say that I saw him for sure last year, but there were some pretty nice bucks in that canyon. And that was one reason I went back there to check, just to see what had happened. And I'm assuming he was one of those nice bucks from last year.
That's very interesting. You know, getting back on the Colorado season.
Yeah. Okay. So Colorado, I was down there about 3 days. I saw a couple of bucks I would have been happy with, but you know, that was late August. I figured by late October, that season opened October 19th. The chance of those bucks being right there on that hillside is pretty low. But I knew there was some in the area and where to start my hunt. And these were both, you know, 180 class deer. One was pretty heavy, had some junk up top. So I went back down there. I arrived about 3 or 4 days before the season. I think I got there about, I said it opened the 19th, it opened the 21st. And I got there about the 17th or the 18th. So I spent that first 3 or 4 days looking for those bucks. I didn't find them. They had left that area. There was other small bucks around. So I knew the deer hadn't migrated. Those bucks were just hiding. And when I say left the area, left the big hillside they were on, they're probably right. right there in the. And boy, opening day I saw 19 bucks, and that's pretty good for late October. Did see a couple shooters, just couldn't get on them too far away. You know, long distance classing, you know, 2 miles down the canyon, that kind of a deal. Never did see those other bucks that I had scouted, and hunting that day, and then it gets worse every day because it, you know, it starts to warm up. The bucks go back in the cover. That's how it was. So I saw 19 opening day. I've seen about 4. So it took 7 more days to see, you know, 20 other bucks. It really did. It got really, really slow. And I ended up killing a pretty nice buck. He was by no means a giant. He was 26 wide, you know, good main beam, just a good looking buck. Didn't score well at all because he had short forks, but he was the third best buck I saw on the hunt. And the other two that I saw, I didn't even pass them up. I tried to get them. They just got away. So he was really the best buck I had a chance at. I killed him on the second to the last day. Kind of a funny deal how I killed him. It was mostly spot and stalk during that hunt, but spot and stalk was more like an hour in the mornings. And once that hour was gone, you had to know where some deer were and, you know, steel hunt there, and ambush hunt. It was just slim pickings. I saw him on Thursday and I thought, you know, he's a nice enough buck that if it was the last day, I would shoot him. We've talked about this before, you know, don't pass a buck up early in the season that you wouldn't shoot on the last day. Well, I do. And so I passed him up. I let him go. And he was only about a mile and a half from the truck. I only had to walk about a half a mile to glass him from the truck. And then he was just about a mile. Good last day buck down for sure. So I was hunting another area. I had a horse. I wasn't packed in, but I was using a horse to access some of the backcountry. And it closed on Sunday. And on Saturday, I rode up this canyon, ended up hunting up on these mesas up at the top of the canyon, hunted all morning. I think I just saw one buck. And as I got up on top, I was like, wow, it's only about a mile from where I had seen that buck a couple days ago. Just the way all the drainages came to the top. You know, I saw the buck in this drainage. I was hunting over here in this drainage, but where they come together at the top, you know, just like a mile across. It was still kind of early. I don't know, 9 o'clock. I thought, you know, I should at least walk over there and get some good recon on the country, maybe glassing points, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because I had only seen it that morning. So I headed over there. It didn't take me very long to get over there. You know, 40 minutes or so is a pretty flat walk. And I got over there, and I'm looking at the rim, and there's a bunch of quakies. And I'm like, you know what? I think this is exactly where that buck was. I think he was in that quakey pocket. And I thought, well, I'm right here. They might still be up. You know, no deer, no good bucks coming out in the open at all. You know, everything's in the trees. So I pussyfooted around that for about not very long, maybe 15 minutes, just kind of glassing down in the quakies. And I took a step. And I heard something below me, and I threw the binoculars up. 80 yards away, nice 3x4 buck stands up out of his bed, and looking right up the hill. Not at me though. He was looking past me. He had heard me. He had heard something, but he didn't have me pegged. And so, man, I got the rifle on him, and you know, I wasn't going to shoot him. But when I saw that buck on Thursday, he was with another buck. So I thought, maybe this is them. Well, that buck turned and went heavy into the trees. Headed out towards the other edge of the quakey pocket. And I thought, well, maybe he's with that other buck. I should probably not just stand here with my thumb up my nose. So I pussyfooted up around the top of the quakey pocket. I only had to move about 100 yards to where I could see the other edge of the quakey pocket. So I moved from this side to the top and then down and around. I could look down there. And as soon as I come around the edge of that quakey pocket, there that big sucker was standing. And he had been with that smaller buck. And they had heard me. And they had come to the edge of the quakies, and they were just standing there trying to kind of decide what to do because it was about a 50-yard opening they had to go across. And this is the funny part. You're going to love this, Ryan. I can't remember if I told you this or not. So they caught me off guard. I didn't expect to see them. I should have been ready. Had the gun on my shoulder. And, you know, I don't have very good eyeballs anymore unless I look through my binoculars. There was no time to look through the binoculars. They were too close. I could just tell he was way bigger in the body than this 3x4 buck. And I had looked at that 3x4 buck in my binoculars, and so I knew, you know, he wasn't just a runt. This buck was way bigger in the body. And so I reached up, ripped my rifle off. As I moved, they saw me, and they took off. And as I brought the rifle around, I pulled the trigger. And I fired a little warning shot in the air. And by the way, the deer are at about 80 yards. And what I did is I brought the rifle around. As I was bringing it up, I jammed my finger in the trigger guard, and I just pulled the trigger. So that's why you always want to have your gun pointed in a safe direction. So we'll call that a warning shot. They went from kind of little bounds, to full out running. And I jacked another shell in, stepped forward down onto my knee, and there was a big rock. And I just kind of laid my hand across the rock. And now they're at about 100 yards, threw up on the back of his neck. He was going straight away. Just took just a second to make sure I was shooting at the right deer. Shot, missed, got another shell in, and now he's really kicking in the afterburners. And he's kind of doing this thing down through the Quakies, and it's getting thicker and thicker. And he turned just a little bit, like he hit a bunch of brush, and he had to turn just a little bit to go to his right. And that was all I needed. I got a real good look at his shoulder from the side, kind of maybe steep quartering away, and I pasted him and I got him.
Hold on one second there. So two things I want to highlight. A, that's why we call you the legend.
The legend.
Well, that's why we tell people we call you the legend.
B, take us through, because a lot of guys, after they did that, they would not be able to collect themselves enough to make the shot. What was the thought process from, because I've been there, things happen in this, the heat of the moment. What was your process after you gave them that sports, you're a sportsman, man. You gave them the warning shot. You're a true sportsman. You want to let them run a little ways. So what was your thought process?
Well, I shoot at a lot of rolling tires. That's kind of one of the things I practice with. And it isn't just to learn how to hit running game. It's so that handling your rifle quickly just becomes second nature. Safety off, good field of view. It just becomes second nature.
Wait, stop, so right Ryan. There. When you say rolling tires, what, you just like huck a tire down a hill? Or what's this process about? I don't know anything about this.
Me and my son, I've got a tire with a piece of plywood glued in the middle of it, and I paint a target on it, and it's just like silhouette shooting. Every time you go, you just repaint your target so you can see your holes. And then I'll take my son up, and he'll stand 50 yards away from me, and I'll have him roll the tire. Now obviously we're very safe in what direction I'm shooting. I shoot away from the tire roller. I don't want an email on somebody that's telling me this is dangerous. It could be dangerous for an idiot, put it that way.
He's not in the tire, right?
No, he's not in the tire. But,
you don't give him a warning shot.
So I've shot at a lot of rolling tires, guys, hundreds and hundreds of rounds of rolling tires. That's probably why I shoot the barrels out of my guns, because it gets you fast with your rifle. So, Ryan, to answer your question, probably the only thing I thought was when that warning shot went off was, who the heck is shooting? Oh, that's me. That was the last I thought. And I think if there was anything going through my head, it was, oh, crap, I got to hurry. This buck is getting away. And I just let it take over. And those three shots, I would imagine, were probably, 6 seconds, 8, 10 seconds. I mean, it was as fast as you could shoot. And so really no thought process at all. You got to get to where you're just handling your gun. And as an outfitter, I've just got to watch a lot of people freeze up in these situations. And I used to too, and I probably still will. But the more you handle your gun, the faster you'll get, and the less you'll have to think. It's the same thing in athletes. I talked about it in my book. It's called automaticity. You should do a task enough that you don't have to think anymore when you're doing it. And that's what was happening.
Yeah. I think you got to get it down to muscle memory. And I don't roll a tire, but I'll have like 3 or 4 targets and I'll have to shoot them. Kind of like when we shot at the deer with you, when I was with you and shot that mule deer, shot. I had a gun malfunction. It didn't load the next round. Pulled the trigger. I don't remember that. Pulled the trigger. Yeah. And now he's getting after it, and I have to shoot. Well, I made you get out of the way and duck, make the last shot. But it was all within probably 10, 15 seconds, I would guess.
At the most. I mean, and that's why you see me write so much in my articles about you got to be fast. You got to know your weapon And you know, you shoot a big long range rifle, but you still know it. You know, everything's dialed down to zero for the close range stuff. You're ready for it. And I've made the mistake myself, and I've seen it made a ton of times with guys. You know, they throw their gun up. Oh, I forgot my scope covers, and or you know, oh, the safety's on the right on this gun, or whatever. You know, you got to get through all that stuff. So that was the lesson learned with that buck. You know, you got to be fast. Because I didn't see him drop when I shot him, I sat up there in those rocks for an hour and a half glassing and just waiting to see if I could see him come out. Because sometimes, I mean, you think that they would know, hey, I just heard a gun go off and there's a hunter here. I got to get out of here. When they're close to cover, that's not always the case. It's kind of like when you bugle in an elk and shoot it with an arrow and it runs off and you bugle it back in. You can't call a deer back in, but sometimes they don't go near as far as you think. And so I would just always tell hunters that, you know, just take some time getting down to your kill, because I have learned it the hard way too. You go walking down there, oh, I got him, and boom, he jumps up at 20 yards and, you know, you're not ready, or, you know, you think that would be an easy shot, and they just get away. So, but I got down there and it had killed him.
I know a lot of people have a lot of trouble with waiting. How do you do it? I mean, do you have a system that, you know, if I can't tell for sure, I wait an hour? I mean, what is your system on animals?
You know, number one, a lot of guys are scared to wait because they're afraid somebody else is going to get their deer.
Right.
You know, and so if you're hunting in areas where you're worried about someone else getting your deer, you're probably not hunting where there's very many big mule deer anyways. So I just try to take my time and just know that I've watched enough of them. And I've wounded bucks before. That's why I know this stuff, because, you know, I've been walking down there before and they've gotten away. If they haven't seen you and smelled you, they still don't know what happened, and they're hurt, and they want to lay down and hide. Their instinct is to hide no matter what, whether they're hurt or not. That's what they do. That's why they're hard to get. And so if you leave them alone 20, 30, 40 minutes, an hour — this buck was an hour and a half — I know that they're probably going to stick around. And the more confidence I give them that nobody's coming after them, there's no threat now, everything you've done in your life before by hiding and letting people walk by you is going to work again, they're going to get stiff, they're going to get sore, and they're not going to want to move. And so I don't really have a formula for it, Ryan, but with this buck, the cover was thick enough, and after I shot, I heard one branch break after that, and there were two bucks. I never heard, you know, branches breaking, like deer moving off, and I just thought, he's got to be right here. Either I missed him and he got deep enough in the cover that he's just standing there, and I've seen him stand there for an hour unhurt. Right. And so just, it takes more time than what you think, I guess, is the best way to put it. And just don't ever be in a rush. And there's been a few of them I've let rest like that, and I get down there and they're still up on their feet, but they're hurt and they're stiff, and they give you just that couple extra seconds you need to get another shot at them.
Does that weighting change from archery to rifle? Do you do anything different?
You know, archery is always going to be a standard weight, especially if you don't know where you hit them. But if, you know, if I saw it go in behind the shoulder where it's supposed to go, you know, 20 minutes or something. I mean, I can't stand it. I want to go after them. but you know, if I'm not sure, dude, like with the broken heart buck, wasn't sure if I even hit him. I didn't even go down in there for an hour. You should be hunting areas where there's not a bunch of people, and you should put time on your side. Now, as you're getting close to dark, that can be a little scary because you're like, gosh, do I go after them? Do I not? But the older I've gotten, the more I've learned to just give them some time. They're built to survive. And if you spook them one time and they're hurt, your odds of finding them just went way, way down, because that second time you spook them, they know they're being pursued. The first time, the shot, whatever, they're still trying to figure out what happened. But once you've hurt them and then they see you, they know, okay, I got to get out of here. And then it just becomes, you end up losing a lot of them.
Nice. All right. So I guess we got off topic, but you shot the deer, you're waiting. Take us the rest of the way.
Okay. So went down there hour and a half, and by this time it's getting to be pretty late, noon, 12:30. Got some pictures, gutted him, got him ready to pack out the next day. Hiked all the way back to the horse, rode back to the truck, got back to the truck about dark, got up the next morning early, you know, and just headed up like I was going hunting, and I got him packed out. And so I ended up packing him out the last day of the season. And I was happy with him. I mean, you know, I'd like a better buck than that. You know, he's barely a gold buck, but you know, the way I look at it is if you've done a good job, you've hunted hard, and you get down to the last, you know, couple of days, there's no shame. I mean, those are good bucks. I mean, they're maybe not the kind of buck I'd want to get on the opening day, not the kind of buck I put in for the tag, but they eat well, and it just gets you that much more experience at deer hunting.
Yeah, I'll put a picture of that buck up on the video. I thought it was a great buck. Maybe not a great buck for the legend, but a great buck for anybody else out there. Hey, you got to tell us about the people you ran into when you're hiking down the trail real quick.
Oh, dude, that was funny. Colorado is the funniest place to hunt in that you can be, you know, a couple miles from the road. You know, in Idaho, the only people you're going to run into are pretty much hunters. Colorado, you will run into granola, pine cone bopping, you know, mountain bikers, you know, way back in the deer country. They're usually scared, petrified of you because you're packing a gun and dressed in orange. And sure enough, when I'm hiking back up over that mesa, here comes this nice family, you know, out for the day. You know, it was a dad, probably 60. He had his grown kids out there with him. And, you know, I got blood all over my hands. You know, I'm looking pretty scary. I've been there 8 days. You know, I'm
you got a banjo on your back.
Yeah, dude. I mean, yeah, big. Yeah, I got the Christensen Arms cannon on my back with, you know, the barrels about that big around. So it's like packing a howitzer. And I could see when they saw me, I was about 50 yards from them. You could just see their countenance fall. Like, okay, this could be the end right here, you know. And so I waved at them, you know, just kind of let them know, hey, man, I'm cool. And then they waved. And so I went over there and they weren't hunters, of course. If I remember right, they were from Texas and they had a summer home in Colorado. They were coming out to close it up. You know, some pretty wealthy people. And the dad just had like a million questions, like, you got a deer? You got a deer here? Where did you get him? What did you shoot him with? I mean, he wanted to know everything. But he had about a 19-year-old daughter with him. And I kind of kept looking at her as I was talking to him. And I could tell by the look on her face, she had never seen anything like me in her life, you know, scraggly beard, blood on my hands, packing a gun. It wasn't a look of fear. It was more like a look of, I thought you people died out in the 1800s kind of a look. She never said a word the whole time. And she watched me. She never took her eyes off me. It was hilarious. And then there was another guy there that was about 25. And I think I might've converted him by the time that I left, you know, cause once he found out that, you know, like, we eat the meat, we love the meat, you know, we pack it out, you know, I'm using horses. He just thought that was the most fascinating thing he had ever heard in the world, you know, and where he's at from Texas, he's, you know, must be high fence or something down there. He's like, hey, the people down where we go, they just sit in a blind and the deer come to them and they shoot them and they take them home. And I'm like, oh yeah, you don't do that in the West in most places. So anyways, that was the people.
That is awesome. You know, now they're at home and they're like Googling. They're like, holy shit, we met the legend.
They're probably, the daughter was probably just trying to memorize every detail for the police report later.
She wanted to exactly. So that when this family comes up missing here, yeah, we've seen this guy. We know who he is.
Yeah.
He's Ryan, the freaking legend stuff is driving me nuts, dude. There's probably people that are wondering what the heck you're talking about. So I'm just going to say it. Ryan has nicknamed me the legend, and it's driving me crazy, and he's loving it. They got it all over Rock Slide now. And just so you guys know,
it's not what we want. It's what the people wanted.
No, it's not what the people want. It's what you guys created. Dude,
you know, seriously, I have gotten more comments about that. It, you know, if people are all saying, oh, Robbie don't think he's the legend. That's me and Tanya saying he's the legend. But now it's a game. Now we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
I know. People are posting it on Rock Slide now. The main thing I want to get out there is I don't think I'm the legend. I just like deer hunting. And whenever I hear that name, I think, oh, God, that is like some pious, pompous name. And now I'm going to be stuck with it.
Mike,
so anyways, thanks a lot, buddy.
Mike Johnson called and he texted me and he's like, hey, I stopped by and saw the legend. And I was see, he's the legend.
Yeah.
You know, and then the every name just sometimes stick and you're just going to have to go with it.
And then every text he sent me for like the next week would start with, hey, legend, I got a question.
All right, I know you got to go. So moving on to probably your favorite hunt of the year is when me and Tanya get to come down and see
you. Absolutely.
That was a fun hunt. And yeah, you were not real high on the deer that you had been seeing when we got down there.
Nope. Like I said, I saw, you know, not quite half the shooters that I saw this year. And then the shooters I did see weren't quite as big. And the only buck I had located before you guys got here was that snag buck. I called him Snag because he had a big old cheater on him. I mean, it kind of curled back in. It looked like a fish hook. And that was the only one that I had seen. And I think last year, prior to you guys getting there, I had glassed up like 38 bucks in 3 days. And I think before you guys got here, I'd seen like four. I mean, it was just a night and day difference. But we got lucky. We got a big snowstorm just right before you got here, and that always helps. And you guys hunted 3 days, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so we had. I hunted seven, so I hunted a couple before you got there, and then I think we had five when you were there. And this is, by the way, for your listeners, this is kind of an early rut Idaho hunt. Idaho offers these tags and different units to give you a little bit longer to hunt than the general season. But, you know, they're not late buck hunts by any means. They're still pretty tough. We were hunting private land. I'm a private land outfitter, so I get a little bit of opportunity to do that. But, you know, as you've seen, Ryan, it's not a fantastic opportunity. You still got to get out there and pound the brush and find them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and Tanya ended up killing a really nice buck on Monday. And, you know, we were seeing, what, a couple of bucks a day, three, 4 bucks a day, mm-hmm. something like yep. that. Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Yeah, and the snow really helped. And so Tanya killed that one on Monday. I'm not sure if that was a buck I had ever seen there before. I had posted that picture up on that live hunt thread, and a couple of guys thought maybe it wasn't the same buck. It might not have been. But, you know, that was a pretty good buck for what we had out there this year, Tanya. So I hope you're really happy with them.
I am after he made me work for it. I mean, he was a little bastard. I'm not going to lie. He didn't just like, it's not like how, you know, they act for you. They just like, you know, fall down and die because you're the legend. Like, he wanted me to really work for that. I sat there and we glassed him for what, like 2 hours?
Oh, we sat down on him at like just before 9, I think. And she shot him, I think, at 11.
Yeah. 11-ish. I mean, he didn't want to come out of those quakies that we saw him in. And he was not my favorite thing after that, because I was so pissed off from having to sit there so long and thinking I was going to lose like six of my toes from frostbite.
It was cold. You're right. And that's a cold place to sit. I know where you guys were. That is cold. The wind, there's just no wind block up there. And so, but yeah, you did a good job on him. And basically for your listeners, the methods we were using was, obviously I pre-scouted the area, so I was hoping to just be hunting a couple of good bucks. That didn't pan out. We never did see snag, but basically Ryan was just glassing tons of country. And then I was trying to get in the fringes of those country where he couldn't see. And I would still hunt a little bit. I was still glassing, but you know, I was on my feet a little bit more. And that's why Tanya got so cold, because they were just sitting and glassing. And I think between us, we did a pretty good job. You know, we pretty much knew what was there. We were starting to kind of see the same deer every day. And so you killed yours on Monday. The season was open until Wednesday. And I'll tell you what, man, you guys leaving, like whenever you go on a hunt and you're with somebody and then they leave, that is like the loneliest feeling in the world. It's more lonely than just going on a hunt when you're alone.
I agree.
You know?
I've been there. So, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, totally. So you guys driving off, I'm like, well, man, gosh, I got two more days. I'm just going to do my best. But, you know, it was lonely up there. And so I think the day after you left, I found a pretty good buck. I'd never seen him before. And, you know, he was a 25 wide. You know, he had a couple extra, just small cheaters. But he had a 3-point on his main frame. And, you know, he didn't fork on his G4. G2. He didn't fork on his G2. And so he wouldn't score all that well. But, you know, he was a pretty good buck. And so I went ahead and passed him up the day before the season was over. And, you know, I had a good freezer full, too. I'd killed that Colorado buck like a week before. And so I hunted the next morning. And then, I came back to camp, got all cleaned up just so I could pull out that night and was just going to do an evening hunt, you know, 3 o'clock to 6:30 and call it good. You know, I had come to peace that I was not going to get a deer just because I had not seen anything that I was happy with. But we talked about this in previous podcasts about passing up bucks, you know, and you know, that's why I've always subscribed to that, you know, you got to pass up the nice bucks or you're never going to have a chance at a really good one. So the last night I thought about that buck I passed up, you know, I thought he'd be a good buck, you know, the last day, definitely, but it's not the last day. And the other reason I passed him up, we had primo conditions. The deer were really starting to rut hard by then. I mean, all the does had bucks with them. You know, I was seeing new bucks and everything. So when I went out that evening, I went to an area that was like a mile from where he was, because I thought, nah, I'm not going to go after him. You know, maybe I'll find a different one. Set in glass for about an hour. I had taken the horse with me. I tied him down in the bottom, and this plays into the story in just a minute. Got up on this little knob, and I was just going to watch a bunch of country. And as it started getting closer to dark, just really just try to only glass the stuff that was within, you know, 500 yards of, you know, what I could shoot or stalk. And couldn't help myself. It's about 5:15. I think it gets dark about 6:15. And I glassed over onto this knob that was about a mile away. And sure enough, there was a good buck out there chasing does. And I didn't get a real good look at him. I was looking at him from the back. They always look a little bit better from the back, but he looked heavy. And it looked like he kind of had stubby forks, but he good looking buck. And I thought, oh man, that's the kind of buck you shoot on the last day right there. I thought he was like 27, 28. So he's a mile away. You know, there's no way that I can hike over there and get within range. So I headed down to the horse. Pretty new horse. This is the first year this horse has been in the hills alone without other horses. And I jumped on him. I said, Leo, don't kill me, but we got to haul butt over there, buddy. And there's a little two-track down through the bottom, you know, logs falling over it. You know, it used to be a road, but it's pretty shot. So we got on that, and I spurred him and just held on. And, you know, when you got a pack on and you got a rifle and a scabbard, I mean, you look like a fool going down the trail and that thing. Everything's just flopping and, you know, noisy, but we're down in the trees. So I thought, well, this is the only chance I got. So I rode him probably 1,000 yards, and I tied in the bottom. I figured I was probably still, I don't know, 600 or 700 yards from the buck, and crept up out of the bottom, got to a little sagebrush knob that was about 20 yards in front of me. And I just walked far enough that I could put about this much of me, you know, from my chest up over the knob. And I threw up my binocs, and I was only about 450 from those deer. I got a little closer than what I thought. And the does must have heard me breaking brush coming through the bottom on that horse, because they were really alert. They weren't running, but they were looking my way. And I thought she might have even seen me, even though I didn't skyline myself. And I thought, oh, man. And, you know, I'd lost, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. You know how it is when it's overcast and, you know, getting towards dark. I mean, it gets dark fast and it gets dark early, you know, compared to sunny skies. So it's even getting kind of hard to see. And I thought, man, I got to kill this buck. I couldn't see him, but I crawled forward and I got on that little sagebrush knob, and I laid down. There was a little post sticking out of the ground. I laid my rifle over it and started glassing, and I spotted him. And he was broadside, and I ranged him about roughly 430, 450, it could, you know, somewhere in there. That's why I shoot a flat shooting rifle. So I got on him. And lot settled, took a look at the crosshairs, and they were pretty steady. But I couldn't get the butt of the gun down on the ground or down on the pack or anything. There was just no time. So the front's rested, but the butt of the gun is against my shoulder, so I'm the only thing stabilizing the gun. And just as I touched the trigger, I saw the crosshair come off of him. I was virtually 100% sure that I missed. And they dove into the cover. It's kind of good when there's snow around, your rifle's not quite as loud. They dove into the cover and disappeared. Well, I thought, I got nothing to lose. I just missed. They're in the cover. I should try to cut a couple hundred yards off of this deal, and maybe I'll get a different angle and I can see down in there. And it's getting dark now. I took off through the sagebrush, come to just another little hump. I took my hat off, laid it on the hump, laid down, got my glasses out. Of course, I'm just pouring sweat now, so, you know, the lenses are fogging up, and I'm glassing, and, man, must have been my lucky day. Those deer had gone straight away, turned about 50 yards, and then come up out of the brush, and now they're only about 300. And it's four does, and he was with about four does and fawns. And so I thought, man, if he comes out, I've got him dead to rights here. So I just waited. It wasn't 10 seconds, and he come walking out. And he's right on those does. He wasn't concerned with me. And got him. Killed him instantly. And so it's probably, well, it is 300 yards to get up there. and it's steep. So it took probably another 15 minutes. And if you go on Rockslide, go to our YouTube channel. And I think it says Last Light Buck or something like that on there. You can see how dark it was when I walked up to that buck. I mean, it was the end of legal shooting light. And I couldn't believe it. It was the same buck I had passed up the day before. I didn't even know it until I got up there and started handling his antlers. I'm like, this is that buck I passed up the other day. He had moved about a mile as the crow flies around the mountain. And, you know, that's what's happening when they're chasing does. They just move. And I was really happy with him. Even though I passed him up the day before, I was really happy with him. So just the way it panned out this year, both the bucks I killed, I ended up passing up earlier in the season and killing them later. Doesn't usually happen that way. Unfortunately, when you pass them up, usually you never see them again, but that's how it was this year. So he ended up being like a 5x7, even though he just had three on that one side because he had a couple extra points. You know, didn't score well at all because of that 3 point on the one side, but, you know, good heavy buck. I'm happy with him. If anybody wants to go on to that live hunt on Rockside, it's in our live hunt. You'll see it on there. You'll see Tanya's buck too. And so that was it. Killed one the last couple of minutes of the last day, and that was the 2017 season.
That buck you'd never seen before, you never scouting wise.
No, never saw him this summer. He just kind of showed up, and you know how brushy it is up there. He could have been there the whole time. I'm not saying he migrated in, but right. We had enough snow going on that there was definitely bucks moving, and you know he could have moved in from somewhere else. That's about when they do start migrating, so. You know, I don't want to say he wasn't a resident buck, but I had never seen him before.
Gotcha. Another question I've gotten several times with Tanya's is, it's an either sex tag, so you can put in for that tag every year. People keep asking me that question.
Yes, you can. Yeah, that's the beauty of those either sex tags. You don't have the 1 year waiting period on them. And again, you know, that we have them in, you know, rifle hunts and muzzleloader hunts that allow you to hunt into early November. And, you know, I think some people get the idea that, oh, it's hardcore rut. You know, it's going to be easy. It's not. And some guys get discouraged on those. But I'd rather have that tag than the general season tag for the most part. The only time that I really would rather have the general season tag is if I've scouted up a really good buck and I want to be on him opening day. But it typically does get a little bit better that first week of November.
Right. And forgot to ask you, your Colorado buck, they weren't rutting at all that you could
see.
They
were just starting to. I'm glad you asked that. I killed that buck. It closed on the 29th. I killed him on the 28th. And on the 26th, I saw my first mature buck rutting does. He was about a 164 point, probably 3.5, 4.5 year old deer. Yeah, and he was all over those does. So they were just getting there. But the day I killed that buck in Colorado, he was still with another buck. I didn't see any other does in those quakies. You know, he hadn't quite started rutting yet.
All right. Well, it's early, but what's your 2018 plan? What do you got going on?
Dude, I'm going to watch the winter here and kind of see what happens. Idaho didn't have winter kill in some of our units. So, you know, if we get a good winter over here that's still not that great, I may apply in a different part of Idaho just to continue to try to get out of the winter kill. Winter kill's tough, you know, and just how it is. So I'll be looking at that. Jared Bloomgren and I are going to try to do an archery or a muzzleloader hunt in Colorado. Nice. Now that I burned my points, you know, I can hunt some of these, you know, 0 and 1 point units and stuff like that. Jared's got a couple of points. For those that don't know, Jared's overseas right now, serving our country. He's missing a hunting season, and him and I mm-hmm. had talked about trying to do a hunt. And we thought, well, hey, man, no better time than this year when you're coming back. So that'll be a Colorado hunt. Haven't settled on a unit. You know, I know a bunch of them down there. We'll pick one here as we get into spring, kind of watching the winter down there too. Probably just Idaho and Colorado next year, unless I just, you know, end up pulling a good tag in one of these other states that I have points in that I'm, you know, not really planning on right now.
Right. And on that winter kilt, I went hunting with one of your, and I guess employees, your scouting guys, Jim. And
yeah.
Jim. We saw some great deer. Couldn't kill any of them, but we saw some great deer.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying about it being spotty. And, you know, some of those places that he went, he said, hey, it was really, really good compared to other years too. And so, you know, I don't want to discourage people from hunting Idaho. I mean, when these winter kills hit, they can be real spotty. And, you know, if you saw good bucks or you know, got good contacts that did, I wouldn't be afraid to hunt it. I'm just trying to let people know it's not what it was in 2014 through 2016 for big deer. It's definitely down.
You're going the wrong way with this. It's terrible. We didn't see any deer. Idaho sucks. Don't put in. Don't buy a tag. Save your money. Oh, it's horrible. You're not going to get anything.
Yeah, well, people, I guess, are going to have to pick. You're listening to Tanya, you're listening to me, but
oh great, yeah, sure. Tanya or the legend. Yeah, that's gonna be a real hard choice. Thanks a lot.
All right,
the legend guy, can't wait for that to go away.
Oh, it won't.
Two quick gear questions and then you can go.
Yeah, dude, I got about 8 more minutes here.
Okay, so you did your deal with the 7 mag worth the 270 short mag.
Yes. Yes.
So now you're what, 3 years into it, right?
3 seasons into it from switching from a 7mm Remington mag for 25 years right now to a 270 Winchester short mag.
Any regrets? How do you like that Christensen Arms TI Summit? I mean, go ahead.
Dude, that gun has done everything that I wanted it to do, and the caliber has done everything that I wanted to do. For your listeners that don't know, I'm not a long-range shooter, but I do think you need to be proficient to that kind of 500-600 yards, which is very doable these days with hash mark scopes and, you know, these lighter backcountry guns. And so that's what I went to. Ryan, probably the only thing I haven't liked about the Christensen, and this isn't a fault of the gun, is I went with the 26-inch barrel. I should have just stayed with the 24. This 270 Winchester short mag shooting RL26 and H4831 shortcut this year. I'm getting loads at 3350 to 3400 feet a second. So even if I jump back to a 24 inch barrel, I'm still probably going to be 33. You know, that's 300 feet a second faster than the 270 Win. You know, these are 130, 140 grain bullets. I'm really happy with the gun, Ryan. And I don't see me. I mean, I may try another gun just because that's what we do. Sure. But I'm really happy with the Winchester short mag, and then running the Vortex Light Hunter with their it's a non-dialable scope, non-exposed turrets, so just the 5 hash marks. And I think if you're not, if you don't know what that is, you need to look into that. That will get you to 400, 500, 600 yards, and, you know, ethically, and, you know, anybody can do it with just a year at the range and without having to go, you know, completely long range, which, as you know, Ryan, takes, you know, a lot more effort, a lot more tools, a lot more time.
Yeah, you're shooting burgers this year, right?
Yeah, I did the 130 Classic Hunter for the 2015 and 16 season. Killed 2 good bucks with those. Really liked them. But they came out with a 140 in the Classic Hunter. And the way I understand the Classic Hunter design, they've just made the ogive so it's a little more forgiving in feeding and fits more rifles. So I went ahead and tried that. And that was what I was getting the 3350 out of, is in that 140. And that's just screaming. That is deer medicine there. And I've only killed 1 deer or 2 deer with the 140s, but I'm really happy with what it did. I mean, one shot kills on both of them, even though it took, you know, had to shoot a couple times. The bullets that hit them killed them. And the 130s, you know, just did the same thing. I saw on Rock Slide they're talking about burger failures. I haven't had any of that in mule deer at all. I've been very happy with the burgers.
All right, and the last thing is, if you guys don't know, Robbie has hobbit feet. Very wide, very short, very hairy. So you found you said one of the best boots you've ever used.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to be full disclosure. Kennetrek is a Rockslide sponsor. But when they came on this year, they went ahead and sent me a pair of their Hard Scrabbles, which is a 7-inch boot. It's not their big, tall hiker, and a non-insulated boot. And I used it from July and even into November before it got real cold. Very happy with that boot because it comes in a 4E. A lot of boots do, but this was a good wide 4E. It really fit my foot. And the boots are hard to break in. I put a review up on Rockslide. Make sure you read that. These are not the kind of boots that you buy and then you go sheep hunting next week. That's probably where the horror stories are coming from, guys that are not getting them properly broke in. I had about 30 miles to get them broke in. You know, it took me a couple of weeks, and they are comfortable support is what I would call them. They feel stiff when you put them on, but once you get them broke in, they've got support in all the right places. So even if you don't have a wide foot, I could recommend that boot for deer hunting, sheep hunting, you know, even elk hunting. Even up to, you know, carrying heavier packs, although you might want a, you know, a little taller boot if you want to do that. But for what I do, sneaking around, not carrying a heavy pack all the time, I was really happy with those boots.
Yeah, I used the word best. I hate using the word best, but you've used a few boots now, and that one came in. You rate that really high.
Yeah, exactly. Did I say the word best?
I did. So.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
I hate using the word best, and I
did. Yeah, sure. They were the best for me. this year, based on other boots that I've tried, because you know I bought boots in 4E before, and they work. I mean, obviously I've been doing it, but it still feels like there's just not enough room in there. I'll get a little pain on the side of my foot. Those broke in nicely, and they're wearing very well too. It's hard to estimate how many miles you really walk, you know. So I'm just keeping it broad, probably 50 to 100 miles I put on those this year. They still look new. They're, you know, the rand is holding together well. It's not all nicked up. And I hunt nasty, rocky stuff. Mm-hmm. So they were the best that I tried this year. Let's put it that way.
You need to put your Fitbit on them and then put it in your journal.
Yeah, I know. I've thought about that before because I have some of that. And I did it a couple summers ago. But it was just one more thing to track and one more thing I'm, you know, and logging force, on, and I just got tired of it.
Electronic force field will jack something up.
Yeah, I have a force field, as Ryan knows. I'm the only guy that can't use Skype. But yeah, really happy with those boots. The other thing I wanted to mention before we go, Ryan, those GXW cameras, we probably ought to do a podcast or something on those. Those are the Absolutely. Wireless cameras. Ryan and I went and tried them this year. Those are the ones everybody's worried about, you know, ethically, or, you know, are they going to get abused? You know, I don't know. I think people that are going to abuse them are unethical anyways. But I was really happy with how those performed this year. I can't really call them a game changer, but they sure are convenient not to have to physically be on top of your camera all the time. For the guys that are saying, oh, you'll just be able to sit in camp and wait for the buck to come to the water hole and go in and shoot them. I don't know what the heck you're talking about. When a camera takes a picture, unless you're just sitting, you know, 100 yards away, you're never going to get to where that deer is going to be. I mean, and I didn't use mine in that way at all. You know, I even pulled it before the season. I just don't think they're going to be that much of a problem. But, boy, they sure are a neat camera. And those are those stealth camera GXWs.
Yeah, and I used mine, and it was 5 hours away at the fastest. There's no way that I can get up there. Anybody that, you know, that's just like anything. If you – people are going to abuse what they abuse because they're bad people, not because of the camera.
Well, and if you're going to be sitting right where the camera is, close enough that you can take a shot, why are you going to wait to look at it onto your phone? Just watch where you're going to be watching, where the camera's at.
Exactly. I think there's a lot of fear with this stuff. And again, you know, I'm always going to go to the maximum that the law allows. So if, you know, Idaho decides, hey, we're not going to allow wireless cameras, that's fine. I just won't use them. It's no problem at all. I'll just go check my cameras. That's no problem at all. But from what I found this year, it was really nice to know quickly what was on your cameras, you know, be able to plan your hunts and everything. So we got ours from Black Ovis. We want to thank Kendall Card. He sent us a couple of them, and just really neat cameras. And you know, if you're an outfitter or a private land hunter too, that they would be the cat's meow. You have to have at least 3 bars of AT&T service to get them to work, but they give you a lot of good real-time intel.
Yeah. Not only their wireless cameras, but I used for the first time, pretty much all stealth cameras period. And there's 2 things that I really noticed is they don't take a lot of you know, brush triggered pictures. Mm-hmm. And the pictures are just super clear. I actually killed a bull that I had on camera, and that's the first time I've ever done that this year with the stealth cam.
Yeah, and those pictures are almost stunning, you know, when you see them. It's like, wow, this is coming out of a trail camera. So for you trail camera guys, you might take a look at those stealth cams. We were really happy with them.
We'll put the links up onto the website so you guys can access all those and just go right to the site. So,
yeah, and put that G34 up as well. That's the lower end camera. They're like $100. You can get them for under $100 if you buy them in bulk. And, you know, they're not wireless, obviously. But, boy, stunning pictures, great trigger speed. Didn't get a lot of false pictures from sun rising and stuff like that. A good little camera for $100.
Yeah, we'll put all links back to Rockslide too. So
anything that we talk about, I try to put all the links up there so you guys can find the stuff easier.
All right. Well, let's do another podcast when the application season gets rolling and we know a little bit more about the winter.
Shit, sounds like we need to do one just on the gear we used this year.
Yeah, I agree. Been saying. I think that we need to do a run through of what worked, what didn't work, and
yeah, you bet, man. I did the Kenetrek boots, the Vortex Light Hunter, the 270 Winchester Short Mag, Summit Tie. Of course, I've been shooting that a couple of years. Carbon Canyon frame, the off-grid food. We should talk about that. I know you had them on your podcast, but I got to try a bunch of their stuff this year.
Another thing for guys that hunt like you do a lot is those cryptic clothing that's really quiet. I think people miss those a lot.
The Velis, I reviewed it last year on Rock Slide. If anybody wants to go on there, it's the Cryptic Velis system and their Anorak jacket. But I continued to wear all that this year for the really cold weather hunts. You saw I was wearing it when we were hunting Ryan. And top stuff and wearing very well. I got two seasons on it now. You know, I'm probably 30, 40 days in this stuff, and it's still looking new. No tears, no nothing.
Butch would say, there's no acoustic signal.
No.
Or what do you say, signal? No acoustic signal for signature. Those military folks.
Yeah, that sounds just like Butch, doesn't it? You need to have him on your podcast, Ryan.
I've tried. We went to Boise, but I will get him on.
He's ghosting us.
For all of you out there, if you have not subscribed to the Avery Adventure podcast, it will be worth subscribing to just to hear Butch from Cryptic and Ryan Avery go at it about being in the military and gear and all the other stuff. Those guys have me in tears every time they get
together.
He's
an officer. I'm enlisted. You know, I'm always wrong, but I got to give him shit.
That's right, dude. And it's fun. Did he ever send you that box of crap he was talking? I'm literal crap. Oh, he had a box full of crap.
He did dip the rifle, so I can't tempt fate there because I might get a big box of crap.
All right, man. I got to get to work.
Thanks a lot, Robbie.
Thanks, Robbie.
You too.